Okay, welcome back to Hophead Said's Pines and Pairings. I got a good breath there to lead in with an enthusiastic, hey, how do you do? I am Curtis Taylor, also known as Hophead Said.
I'm Jason Hendrick, the hungry man from Everybody's Hungry.
And we are coming to you from Hophead Studios, deep within the Lauder Ton of Hophead Studios, I guess. And so if you hear any echo, that's not a garage. That's all the shiny stainless steel we're hiding in down here.
You know, with brewer friends, I'm usually the sanitation crew. Oh. So I'm very familiar with the Lauder Ton and a little scrubbing and polishing.
All right. So when are you going to get to move up to assistant brewer?
It's going to be a while.
I think your friends are taking advantage of you.
That's okay, because I secure free bottles of fantastic homebrew. So
okay,
not
so,
too concerned.
So if just so you know what's happening, you're good?
Exactly. Okay. I like to be involved with the process, and I like to take home quality product. I'm not too concerned about actually being the guy pouring the green in.
Right. I'm kind of the same way whenever I'm hanging out with my dad, who's a carpenter. You know, it's like a live home improvement show, and I don't mind sweeping up or anything, but then I get to kind of watch around. So I know that I'm the gopher and I'm the cleanup crew too.
And occasionally you sit on a chair that's fine quality homemade.
Right, there you go. Well, I don't know about that, but I get to watch houses being built, which is also fun. All right, so back on topic here, we are talking our way through the flavor components and food pairings of the 23 different BJCP, which stands for Beer Judge Certification Program. And you can find out more about BJCP by going to bjcp.org. That's where I find out all my information anyway. And there's actually 23 styles. We're going to break them up into 24 for sure. So we know we're going to absolutely have 24 episodes.
Yep.
And I think
we've gone through three so far, but we got one variation in those 23 that you're going to separate, right?
At least, yeah. So we're going to split up the Irish and the Scottish ales. I think there's plenty of difference between those two. And then when we get to styles like IPAs and stouts, we'll definitely pick one middle of the road that kind of is a good representation. But there's some extreme ones in that just are screaming for their own show. So we'll end up doing that. We are looking at, for this episode, the BJCP style number four, which is dark lager. And there's several different kinds. There's dark American lager. There's the Munich Dunkel. There is...
I like Dunkels.
Dunkels, yes. And then there's the Schwarz beer. And
the Schwarz.
Be with you, yes.
Bingo.
And so any number of Spaceballs quotes you can throw out.
It's interesting when we're looking at the notes real quick, too. The spelling on the Schwarz beer... Schwarzbier. Bier is something we're going to see very typical of a lot of German style beers when we're talking about the pronunciation and spelling of beer, right?
Yeah, and one of a spelling sort of tip or whatever, whenever in
reaching back to your teaching background,
when in doubt, well, and actually it was a teacher friend of mine, and her last name was Schneer, and she told me, and because I was having a hard time remembering if it was I before E or E after I. And she pointed out to me that generally in German words, if it's the ear, so if it starts with an E, it's always the IE. So,
really?
Yeah, so just kind of keep that in mind.
You got it.
So anyway, we'll get back to the beer. And we've got the dark style lagers. And these ones range anywhere from 4.2% to 6%.
And they're pretty consistent so far through the styles. We've done light lager, pilsner, amber lager, now to the dark lager. As far as alcohol percentage, we've been very consistent with the 4 to 6% range, with the light lagers being the exception slightly, going down as low as about 2.5, right?
Yeah, that one was pretty low. And then but generally, like, the averages on these are in the 4.5 to 5%. So, you know, give or take a point or two on either side of that. And then the 6% ones were, you know, those are extreme examples of those ones. Your ice beers or you know, it's whatever gimmick the premium American lagers.
Can we crack this while you're talking?
Let's do that. So we've got the Zingu. I'm not even sure how to pronounce it, but
Zingu.
This is a Schwarz beer, and Schwarz beers are my favorite dark lager.
It's got a gorgeous deep dark color right now too.
Right, and so Dunkel meaning dark, from the Munich Dunkel, and Schwarz beer, also meaning dark. And one of the things about it, why I like these beers so much, is they've got this really great blend of chocolate, coffee, roasty bitterness that blend well together.
Sure. And you're starting to see that right in the, you know, when we talk about drinking beer, we're engaging a lot of different aspects and senses. Color-wise, we touched on, there's a ton of aroma coming out of this, but those coffee and notes you just spoke of, you're seeing it a little bit in the head and the froth already with some of the nutty coloration, like that off-white, almost almondy tone right to the head.
When we looked at the light lagers, the pilsners, the heads on those, while they were short-lived, but while they were there, were really tight, and they were white. I mean, just almost pure white. The amber lager was a little more off-white, you know, maybe an eggshell. I don't know if that's doing it justice, but a little more off-white, letting you know that there's some other malts in this beer that are some malts that have been toasted a little longer. So the color in the head is coming from, well, it can come from some of the spices and some of the additions in there, and certainly in a fruit beer, you know, as I'm thinking of cherries just off the top, when you pour those beers, you know, that head has a decidedly pink hue to it.
Sure.
But on these ones, once the reason that the head is starting to become a different color is because the malts that were used in there were kilned longer, so they're a little darker, giving the beer its darker color. And these in the Schwarz beer is the darkest of the dark beers. So that it just makes once you start kind of thinking of it in that sense, you know what to expect. If this beer is going to pour black, you can bet that you're going to have a tan, if not a deep brown colored head on it. So as I'm looking at, you know, in smelling it, I get, you know, these really rich chocolate coffee kind of notes. And more than any of the other beers that I get, these two come together so close that it's hard for me to even pull the two apart. They're so closely related, I don't know, in this beer, where sometimes you can get, oh yeah, that's a chocolate flavor aroma, oh yeah, that's a coffee.
No, they're definitely intertwined, almost like a nice, I wouldn't say latte or cappuccino, but a nice sugared coffee. You know, I don't typically drink coffee anymore with cream and sugar. I drink it black. But when you take a nice spoonful of sugar and a pinch of cream to create a froth, that's what I'm getting here. Mm-hmm. Even like remember when you were a kid, you used to do a nice piece of toast with just butter and sugar? I get a little bit of that as well. My grandmother used to toast ours a little bit dark, smear it with butter so you get a velvety, buttery kind of component, and then a little sprinkle of sugar, and you roll it up, and cinnamon as well. That's mm-hmm. the piece I'm missing right now. I'm tasting it, but I'm not talking about it. Sorry, guys. But a little bit of cinnamon sugar toast with a little extra dark toasting on it. Mm-hmm. Comes out real nice for me in this. I'm really enjoying this beer.
Yeah, and especially the first time I had this, actually, and I believe this is a Brazilian beer, yeah, imported from Brazil. What's interesting to me and about especially the last one, the lager, the amber lagers, we were drinking a Negro Modelo, which is a Vienna lager, and it is made in Mexico, and it's hard to find Vienna lagers that are actually made in Austria and or in Europe at all. And here we have a Schwarz beer, a German beer that's made in Brazil, and they do a wonderful job. The first time I had this was at a Brazilian restaurant, and it was at Moqueca, which is this, and I can't remember if Moqueca means soup bowl or not. I can't remember, but it's a place where you go and they basically cook these stews for you in these bowls. They bring them out hot, and you can get anything in it from red meat to seafood. And generally I go for the seafood platter, which, or the mix, which has shrimp and squid and all these other kinds of things in it. But it's all caramelized. It's all cooked together. It's really incredibly savory. You know, depending on how the vegetables were grilled or the meat was grilled, it has some of those smoky components to it. And it just, this beer was...
It makes perfect sense. And looking it up, just for those out there who are curious, moqueca is considered a Brazilian seafood stew based on fish, onions, garlic, tomatoes, and cilantro. But using the Zingu as our base, the toasty, sugary notes that are coming out, I think it makes perfect sense why Brazilian kind of... steakhouse or you know, what's the cowboy name, you know, they got the big sticks of meat and they're roasting and mm-hmm. put whatever you want on your plate, like 30 different styles of meat.
Sure.
Around the richness, the minerally earthy, irony, caramelized component of a good charred meat, I think would sit so beautifully with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a light beer too. So I mean, it's pouring dark, and this goes back to something that I was wanted to mention with the amber lager too, is that these things can pour dark. This one can pour dark, but it doesn't it doesn't fall into that category.
Yeah, it's not cutting my palate either. It's a crispness there, even though it's got a little more velvety, sugary kind of coating feel compared to the previous amber lager, light lager, and pilsner. It still is not viscous like some of the heavier beers we're going to get into later in the podcast.
Right, and so when you're thinking of a food pairing, a contradictory for this one, because this one has enough flavor to hold itself up to a lot of savory foods, sure. Whereas some of the other ones that we've talked about before, the early categories, they don't have the flavor profile to stand
totally
up to.
Totally washed out by a lot of dishes.
So this one stands up to these heavy flavor profiles, savory kinds of dishes, but then the beer doesn't taste like, I mean, when you drink this beer, you don't feel like you've eaten another meal, which can happen in some darker beers that are full bodied. This is a medium light bodied beer. And one of the reasons why it went so well was just because it's refreshing the palate. And then you said on several different times, you know, it's working kind of as a digestive. It's helping to settle everything, cleanse out, and just to take a break from the overwhelming savory foods that you might be eating.
What's cool about this beer, too, is I get a little bit, when we're talking about the sweetness that comes out from the malts, almost like a raisiny black licorice combination. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not overpowering, not so distinct. I'm like, oh, you know, black or licorice. But I think there's a dark raisiny richness underlying in this beer that I think would go nicely with something a little more tart, even like a Greek yogurt base sauce or something a little lemon zest that could really pull out a contrast in that tartness to the malty sweetness we're getting right now with the Xingu.
In fact, I have a low tolerance for licorice, anise, whatever, you know, and so anything over a very small amount becomes too much for me. And this one didn't hit it. And no. So if anyone who's listening has a black licorice aversion, don't be afraid of this beer because
we're not talking good and plenties here. We're talking a very subtle anise kind
of tone. And in a very complementary way to the rest of the flavors in the beer.
And we do try to work within those complementary, contradictory, what was our third category that we
resonant.
Thank you. This one right here, when we're talking about complimentary, I could even see a dessert style, like an oatmeal raisin cookie with a little bit of cardamom nutmeg. So you get a little bit of extra spice out of the cookie that pulls in and plays with the sweetness in the sandbox of the Xingu.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And you know, one of the things that we've talked about plenty of times already is that we like to talk about these interesting sorts of suggestions like beer with vegetables and raw vegetables in particular, and how beer can how beer can do pair well with that, but then also on going the complete opposite of a meal kind of sequential kind of order, go to the dessert and go into, you know, like you said, an oatmeal cookie or bread puddings or something else.
Would be amazing with this, especially if you're doing more of a creme fraiche style topping where it's got a little bit of that sour tartness plays with the sweetness.
I love the tart suggestion because that would have been something I don't do enough of. And when you get just that little bit of a lemon citric kind of tart on the top of it, it's amazing how it can take an incredibly delicious dessert or dish and just kind of notch that up to where you didn't think that
it could get. You don't expect. And that's what is really cool about a lot of chefs and brewers nowadays is they're partnering together. They're trying to brew something that will be complementary to a dish or vice versa. Take a dish that really speaks well and complements or contradicts in a pleasant way to the beer. You know, we're talking about vegetables, and as soon as you said that, I thought about something like with a yam, because it's playing in both worlds as a vegetable with a little starchy aspect, but also a sweetness like a dessert. I think could go really well. I had actually considered taking the Xingu and reducing it down with a little bit of spice and using it as a glaze over some sweet potatoes.
I'd be interested to try reductions. I have not been all that successful with
because when you talk about, especially a lot of beers have a hop component, and when you do a reduction, you know, you're risking pulling out too much of the bitterness. But I think low and slow, and maybe even adding a little pinch of a sugary aspect, either brown sugar or a sweetener like agave would help counteract some of those adverse hoppiness notes. But I'd be interested in at least trying it because, again, as we said in previous episodes, if it doesn't turn out, we can always order pizza.
And that's right. Well, and then I would even go as far as to say that if you're reducing anything, you're not running the risk of you are getting you will, because I mean, there's plenty of times where I've taken a beer that I like, and one of the reasons why I like it is because it has an assertive hop flavor, and then when you reduce it, all the liquid's gone, but all the hop bitterness is still left right. over, and so you want to be careful that.
But this, when, I think, has enough residual sugar and sweetness that you would be it'd be okay.
Oh yeah, and I think, you know, talking about the hops, there is little to no hop presence in this. The bitterness that you're
definitely
getting,
not on the nose and the aroma,
right? And the bitterness, it's there just to keep it from becoming too sweet. And the bitterness that we're getting, or the perceived bitterness, is coming from some of those bitter chocolate and kind of coffee flavors that are helping to balance the sure. sweetness of the malt too. So it'll end up, you know, whether you're doing a giant savory stew or going to desserts, this is definitely something that you'd want to give it a shot.
Now, one thing I am noticing about this one, though, versus the previous three styles we've played with, is that as it warms, it flattens very quick. I mean, the other one's flattened as well once the carbonation and that dissipates and it warms up. But this one is going flat very quickly. And I would offer, just because I like to think way outside the box on regular occasions.
Bring it to us.
As it starts to flatten like this and warm, you know, especially if you're like me who sometimes gets home late in the evening and you open a beer and you kind of fall asleep working on your laptop, the beer sits out all night. This has enough caramelization and sweetness and toastiness. I'd do a little splash of sparkling water or maybe a little tonic or something just to bring the effervescence back and try to revive it.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to waste this beer.
No, I mean, I've done some blending kinds of things before and gotten creative, especially if you get a growler and then all of a sudden it's, you know, you thought you were going to be able to finish it when you open it, because if you get a growler, you really need to drink it and not one sitting as soon as you open it.
Yeah, it's one of those things you're going to share with friends, preferably.
Right, and take care of it. But sometimes plans just don't happen and you end up with some leftovers. Mixing it with even a lighter flavored beer. So take this one and blend it with the Negro Modelo, or, you know, going just one step down, one that has a little lighter flavor component than this, to add some of that carbonation. And the difference between the two, you know, if we were to do side by sides, we'd definitely be able to tell. But adding something lighter into it, then you're not necessarily adding, especially if you were to put, you know, you wouldn't want to put any tonic or anything else in there, just because then you end up with those flavors as well.
Right, yeah, and that quinine and the tonic, you know, is definitely going to stand out and probably not in an enjoyable way. But, you know, lately I've got a friend who owns an import company, a fine olive oil and infused vinegars import company, and we've been mixing those vinegars in with sparkling waters and tonics.
Mm.
That's partly where I got the idea from. Mm-hmm. She's got one from South Africa that's got some very interesting botanicals. You give a little splash of sparkling water, and now you've got, going back to that digestive concept, something that's flavorful. It's got a little effervescence down into your systems, and it helps settle the stomach. And I think, again, this lager, the Zingu in front of us, it lends itself to a possibility.
Mm, yeah.
So we can either reduce it, we can sparkle it. Let's play with it.
All right. Sounds like a good some good suggestions there. Looking at the serving temps on this one, talking suggested around 40 to 45 degrees. So warming up a little bit, which is going to just accentuate all those malt flavors too that we were just talking
sure.
about.
Those organic compounds start to really show their best self when they've warmed just a pinch.
Mm-hmm. And so far we've been talking mostly German style beers coming up to, and you know, this one is, the last two have been from Mexico and from Brazil, but these were originally German style beers,
which makes a lot of sense in the, when you think about origins of beer and, you know, monks and age old fermentation practices, where do they come from? Out of, you know, Middle Europe.
Mm-hmm. And so these, so, you know, they've been mid-range, 4.5% to 5%, somewhere in there. These could all be served in larger portions. So, you know, you're talking like steins, seedles, those kinds of things, you know, where you don't have to worry about getting too, especially a seedle if you're sharing with it with friends. But you know, you can drink several of these and still be in okay shape. And that's just the nature of the beast on for these beers, is that they're a lighter body, they're lighter alcohol.
Sure.
And so you don't have, you know, you certainly wouldn't want to drink 24 ounces of an Imperial Stout as opposed to 24 ounces of a Schwarz beer. But so, you know, Pilsner glass, pint glass, Seidel, Steins, any of those are, you know, historically appropriate glasses for this beer.
We're moving along a fun journey, though, because we're only four styles in and the flavor spectrum is already starting to shift.
Right.
So we had some, you know, younger, grassy, gingery, corn notes in the previous three styles. Mm-hmm. We're already moving into some malty, caramely, toasty notes, and we're going to just keep moving along this journey. So mm-hmm. Stick with us.
Yeah, I want to, and just before we get going too, because we talked about, you know, these stews and things also, these beers that are starting to get some of these coffee and chocolate flavors, some smokier flavors, roasty flavors. Anytime you're grilling anything, you know, whether it's grilled veggies or it's grilled meats, these are that's going to be a base resin, a base layer that the whole dish in the beer pairing can be built upon.
Sure. Where you're getting my ideas flowing. I mean, with the Zingu right now, the first thing that came up when you're talking about stews, I'd braise with this. I'd either marinate pork or braise pork with this.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get some interesting flavors, but we don't want to release all our cards now. We got more podcasts to come.
That's right. And there'll be some good braising coming up. Don't you worry. I'm not even sure I know what braising means, but
We'll talk about it as it gets there.
There's going to be some good braising. There's going to be some good braising. Well, thanks for listening to us on this episode of Pints and Pairings. And we hope that, you know, you take a look and like our iTunes, whatever you do with iTunes, like it, recommend it, give us a star, whatever, sure. Give us a good rating. Share it with your friends. And for behind the scenes look, some videos and some other stuff from this episode and others, you can go to hopheadset.com. And click the Pints and Pairings link.
And again, we can find Hopheadset at hopheadset.com, but also on Facebook and Twitter, right?
Facebook, Twitter. And then as well, everybody's hungry. Jason is my co-host, and he loves to talk about food.
I love it. And
how food impacts our lives, how food impacts the community, and also has some great tips for you on how to get involved in your community and make sure that everyone has food. And that nobody's hungry, even though
everybody's hungry.
That's right. So we'll catch you on the next podcast, and we'll catch you later. Cheers.
Cheers.